could see the studio. They're dancing already in the studio. Ragtime, the musical, has opened at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, and it's going to continue through October 27. It's a musical portrait of the early 20th century in America, the stories of a white upper middle class family, an African-American couple, an Eastern European immigrant escaping to America with his daughter, and the themes are themes that are with us now: wealth, poverty, freedom, prejudice, hope, and despair in pursuit of the American dream. And historical figures of the time are also on stage: J.P. Morgan, Evelyn Nesbit, Harry Houdini, Emma Goldman also appear. It's a huge production with 36 actors and 9 musicians, and we're just delighted to have 3 of the actors with us in the studio this hour of the program. We welcome your phone calls. The show just opened, so I don't know how many of you have had a chance to see it in Milwaukee. Maybe you have seen it elsewhere, or you've read the book, which the musical is ultimately based on. So here's how you reach us if you would like to. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Melissa Joy Hart is joining us in studio, plays Emma Goldman. She appeared in last season's production of Assassins. All of our guests have had many, many credits. I'm just giving a few of them. She has many regional credits, including Amadeus, Sound of Music, and Jacques Brel. Well, Melissa, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you said we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but the audience so far, you have experienced a different kind of audience. They seem to be pretty engaged with the show.
Absolutely. They're on their feet before we even finish the last note of the last number. And I've never heard any audiences ever like this in all my years in theater.
Isn't that something? Well, why? What's going on?
I think the piece just resonates with people. It's a journey. We take them on the journey. We don't try to overplay the moments. We play them as a story. We're storytellers. And I think it really resonates with the audiences that they go on this journey with us, and they're with us for 3 hours. And by the time we get to the end, you know, the last button of the show, which we don't want to give away, is really worth it in the end for the audiences. That really, I think it hits something with them, that here's this family that is joined together from all the different classes that we've talked about the entire show. And, you know, I try not to get too emotional in theater, but there's only been one or two shows since we started previews where I don't have a tear in my own eye.
Really?
And I
Isn't
don't like something? To cry my own tears on stage.
Oh, that really says a lot about this production.
Absolutely.
And about the play itself.
Absolutely.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Also joining us in studio is Jessica Hooker. She plays Sarah. She is making her Milwaukee debut.
Woohoo!
Yeah, she played Tamika in Sistas, the musical off-Broadway. She was in the national tour of Legally Blonde. Mm-hmm. Jessica, thank you very much for being
no
with
problem.
Us. Tell us about... I have to ask you to tell us about Emma, too, but tell us about Sarah, the character. Who is she?
Sarah is a washwoman. She's from Harlem, New York, and she comes to New Rochelle. She falls in love with Cole House, the piano player, kind of like the showman of the area. I don't want to give too much away about her role and what happens, but she's a really innocent girl, very young and in love, and, you know, she wants to live the American dream of having a family and going far places and achieving as an African-American woman in that time. Mm. So, and it's actually Jesse Hooker. I should say that just because I'm named after my dad, and he would be mad if I didn't correct.
We have that. We don't want that to happen. Jesse Hooker. Thanks, Jesse. Kelly Faulkner is also joining us. She plays Evelyn Nesbit. And I didn't know much about Evelyn Nesbit. I read a little bit about it, and she was a pretty interesting person in American history. Kelly has been in The Diary of Anne Frank. She played Sally Bowles in Cabaret, which was a terrific performance at the Rep. Oh, that was a good show. Patsy and Always, Patsy Cline, which I also saw. She's a very talented singer and performer. She's been in A Christmas Carol and has a number of regional credits. Kelly, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
This is an interesting character in history, particularly that time, and her legend lives on.
Oh, yeah.
Who was she, Evelyn Nesbit?
Evelyn Nesbit was kind of the Kim Kardashian of her
time.
Oh,
my gosh.
She was this young model who she was the Gibson girl, basically, and became a really acclaimed model when she was very, very young, and was a Broadway dancer, and became embroiled in a huge scandal of the time. The architect Stanford White, who had a penchant for the ladies and the young ladies, took her as a lover, and she later married a very eccentric and actually criminally insane man named Harry K. Thaw, who shot Stanford White to death in a very public, gruesome way, and this trial ensued, and she actually stayed married to him, and there are so many sort of details to this story, but yeah, she was kind of the first tabloid celebrity.
Mm. Yeah, the story is fascinating.
Yeah.
And Emma Goldman.
Yes.
Tell us about Emma. We should know a lot about her in this audience. But
she's a turn-of-the-century anarchist. She was in the country roughly from 1870s up until the time she was deported. She was deported along with 200 other anarchists, kind of when we got into the whole J. Edgar Hoover, McCarthy era. But she is really the voice of the immigrants in the show. She's either the voice of reason or the voice of this is how America really is, and unless you change it, it's not going to change for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the way that especially the celebrities in this show are used, it's really to move the story forward as a storyteller and as a narrator, kind of commenting on these fictional characters with these real life characters. It's really wonderful how they interweave all these different characters. And I'm just ecstatic to play her again because I played Emma Goldman last year in Assassins, but a much different Emma Goldman, and I think that this is a little bit more true to her, who mm-hmm. she was as a person and what she actually did in this country at that time.
So let's think about the American dream. We think about it a lot now and how a lot of people are not realizing it in 2013. Let's look at turn of the century. Let's look at the 1906 night. What year is it set? Is it 06 or is it?
It plays between 1902 and the start of World War I.
Okay, 02 and 17. So tell me how each of you, when you were looking at your characters, interpreted what the American dream would mean to the people that you play on stage. Whether it was distant, whether it was close, what it meant. Is it different to all of the characters? Jesse, you want to start?
Sure. When I think of Sarah and her American dream, I think it has a lot to do with family. You know, she has a child with Cole House, and he isn't present, you know, and I think that's very, you could apply that to today. You know, there's a lot of single moms out there. That's a scary thing. I'm not a single mom personally, but I know many. So that's something that I look at that and how scary that could be and those moments of panic. So I think her American dream overall is having that family all together and achieving and just living together, living peacefully together. You know, I think that's a big deal
for her.
And what
were the clashes between African-American families and white privileged families during this time period of the play? Kelly?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
What were the clashes? What kind of racism was prevalent in America during the time that this play depicts?
Well, I mean, this country, slavery had obviously been abolished, but I think the black community, particularly outside of the larger metro areas, were still not treated as human beings, really, mm-hmm. as proper human beings, and especially immigrants as well. I mean, if you weren't a white person of a certain socioeconomic level, you didn't really have much of a chance.
Mm-hmm. And that's shown in the musical as well. There's many a scene where you see those kind of situations
right.
happening.
So. And what did Emma Goldman have to say about all of this?
Emma
Melissa?
Goldman had a lot to say about everything. There wasn't, you know, Emma Goldman for that time period, she was terribly advanced. She pretty much would speak on anything that anyone would listen. And the best part, I think, about her story is that she was speaking for the people. She didn't have a vote, though, at that time. You know,
oh
as a
my
woman,
gosh, right.
She was speaking about women's rights. She was speaking about workers' rights. She was speaking about women's bodies and how it was, you know. But at that time, women didn't even have the right to vote. So, you know, she was, I think, incredibly ahead of her time, and in particular for this story alone, she's the voice of the immigrants, saying that you can get it, you can achieve this, but it's not possible unless we join as one. And the night that Emma Goldman spoke, it's all about striking and workers' rights. But you know, Emma Goldman would speak about anything anyone would listen to about at that time, and it's she's a fascinating character, and I'm surprised she doesn't pop up in more musicals.
Well, she does. She does in one more. We've been joking that there's one more musical that involves Emma Goldman. It's a musical called Tin Type. So we're going to need to do it at the Rep so Meljoy can come back and play Emma one more time.
I'm referred to as the Rep's resident Emma Goldman.
I'll bet you
But
are.
I just want to remind them I do play other characters.
I've seen it.
And the immigrant experience. We should talk about the there's a wealthy white family that's mm-hmm. involved here. There's an immigrant family that's involved here, too. What are those pieces of this show?
There's a character named Tata who refers to himself as Tata because they gave him a name he couldn't pronounce, and it means daddy, and he's a single father. He's a Latvian Jew and an artist, so he's got the deck stacked against him coming to this country and ends up becoming wildly successful just through sheer perseverance and intelligence and talent. So you see his story and his struggles. And all of the stories, this piece is so brilliant. I mean, starting with the novel, and then the book is so brilliantly done by Terrence McNally. The stories interweave in such a clever, clever way. And we kind of see how it's just a little microcosm of what the world was, and I think what New York specifically was at that time. Mm-hmm.
Did all of you read the Yale Doctorow book? It was considered Modern Library Times mm-hmm. said it was one of the 100 most influential
yeah.
books
oh, yeah.
of the last 100 years.
I had read it back when the musical first came out.
I did too. Oh.
And yeah. then I revisited it. I actually drove out from the East Coast this year to Milwaukee. I just wanted to kind of experience the 16-hour drive, and I listened to the novel on tape, and it was just such a different experience.
Ah.
And I forgot so many of the characters that Terrence McNally has chosen to leave out of it, and a little bit of the stories that how they interweave
yeah.
left them out a little bit. But there's still these little touches in the musical where you're like, they're kind of commenting on what happened in the book.
Oh, definitely.
And Mark has brought some of those moments out as well, which is, it just kind of, it peppers the story even more beautifully than it's already on the paper for us.
Yeah. So how was that drive?
It was wonderful. It was. We had a little layover hiccup, but other than that, wonderful.
And the difference, you live in New York?
I work out of New York. I live in Philadelphia.
Oh, you do? Mm-hmm. So what do you think of Milwaukee?
I love it. I love this time of year in Milwaukee.
You don't like the time of year that's coming up.
I've never been here, but if the opportunity should arise, I'll be more than happy to experience your winters.
This is a huge production. 36 people mm-hmm. plus an orchestra. It's huge. It's the biggest thing I think the Rep has ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It is big. And it's also, you were asking, why do you think people are responding the way they are at the end? And it's big and the sound is big, but it's epic. The story is epic. Mm. Everything is just epic. And I think actually they're using that word in some of the marketing mm-hmm. materials, but it's so true about this show. The story is epic. It looks huge, but it's... I feel like we really earn that at the end.
Definitely.
You know, the story that we're telling, it's more than just about a really lush orchestral sound. It's
yeah.
it's just a huge epic story and a story of the heart.
And you know the space we're doing it in. As epic yeah. as it is, it's still intimate. You're
yeah,
still getting
right.
those tiny moments between a father and a daughter or mm-hmm. or two parents on, you know, a balcony that is just so intimate that I think the audiences expect to see in a smaller space, but they're seeing it in this huge space with this huge set and this huge cast and this huge orchestra, and it resonates with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get over the reaction that we had.
Yeah,
at the
interesting.
End.
It was also, when you think about it, a fairly fascinating time in American history. I am refreshed in reading about the play that the Progressive Movement, Fighting Bob La Follette, who was big in Wisconsin. We had some amazing J.P. Morgan, Henry Ford, some questionable, very, very, what do you call them? You know, they're guys in business, but
yeah.
they had some questionable philosophies, certainly. Mm-hmm. Emma Goldman. I mean, what a cast of characters mm-hmm. who were around at that time mm-hmm. and what the country was dealing with in terms of race and class and inequality and the rich and the poor and also the Model T, mm-hmm. all these
yep.
things that were coming onto the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. All this that was happening, but it was the most productive time in American history for, mm-hmm. you know, industrialism and the Model T. And I think putting Henry Ford in this is just... It's letting you know what's going on at that
yeah.
time. That this man came from nothing, and then here he is building something that's going to change our world even today.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how do you weave this story of people like Emma and the story of Henry Ford and the others, Booker T. Washington, who are on, in this too, along with the intimate stories of these three families, extended families.
Well, I think Melissa touched on this a little bit before. They, Goldman and Booker T. are, and all, actually all of these characters are, they do get involved personally with the main characters, the family characters in the show, but they serve as a little bit of a Greek chorus and kind, they do some narration. So it's really interesting and clever, and
yeah,
you'll have to come see it.
It's letting the audience know where we are in that point of time in history, which I think that's just smart writing.
It's like the more you talk about it. Two people talking to each other, and then all of a sudden someone steps out and is now narrating to the audience. It's so beautifully done, and everything in this production, between the lighting, the set, the direction, the choreography, and then the musical direction, it just works so perfectly.
I can't wait to see it. And I should tell the audience, I told the guests that I have always seen the shows before I do interviews, but I have to tell you this little story that I met this woman on Facebook about a year ago whose name was Kathleen Ann Dunn. That's my name, Kathleen Ann Dunn. And she told me she lives in Scarborough, England, and she had mentioned that the little marketplace where she lives had just had reintroduced some chocolate biscuits that hadn't been in the marketplace for a few years. And I wrote to her and said, chocolate biscuits,
right?
Those sound marvelous. 2 weeks later, I get this huge box in the mail filled with chocolate biscuits, candies, calendars. I don't even know this person. So I sent her back Milwaukee things, and I said, you need to come to Milwaukee. Well, she's never been to America, and in a couple weeks, she's coming to Milwaukee. Same complete name, Kathleen Ann Dunn. We're going to see the show, and I didn't want to see it before she and I saw it. So I will be there.
Awesome.
And if you have seen it, we'd love to hear from you. If you've read the book or you know the story, here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, if you'd like to leave messages there. We also have some music from the Broadway show of Ragtime. We don't have your voices, but we'll ask you to set up some of the pieces that we're hearing as we proceed. Or if you just have, I'm trying to get real political and heavy about this, we can look at what was going on 1900 up till World War I in this country, and if you see any parallels with what's going on in America as we're in this century. What are we in, the 21st? I get them mixed up. 21st century?
Yes. Oh,
is that what we're in?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Do you see any parallels?
Yeah.
We're like, we'll take phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about Ragtime. It's the show at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, and it runs through October 27. We are delighted to have three of the actress performers with us in studio. Jesse Hooker, who plays Sarah in the show, Melissa Joy Hart, who plays Emma Goldman, and Kelly Faulkner, who plays Evelyn Nesbitt. And we're going to be welcoming phone calls momentarily at 800-486-8655. But we wanted to give you a feel for some of the music, and we're going to start with Evelyn Nesbitt. So, Kelly, you want to set this up for us? What are we going to listen to?
Yeah, this is a really fun song, kind of one of the first moments of levity in the show, called Crime of the Century, and it's just all about the very sensational trial that surrounded the murder of Stanford White, and just really kind of comments on the power of celebrity in this country.
Honor. I was once the lady friend of Stanford White.
He's the famous architect!
Yes, that's right. He put me on a velvet swing and made me wear, well, hardly anything. Ruined at the age of 15, Your Honor. Then I went and married Mr. Harry Thaw.
Eccentric millionaire.
Crime of the Century, and we'll talk more about our fascination with celebrity, but we want to take a couple phone calls here. We start with Jeannie from Milwaukee. Hi, Jeannie.
Oh, hi. I just This is one of my favorite. I'm 74 years old. This is one of my favorite musicals of all time.
Really?
The harmony, the music, just everything meshed together. I don't know how to express it in musical terms, but the whole, I cry through the whole thing. The sounds and the, I don't know what it is, but it's just gorgeous. I just love it.
Well, thank you so much for calling. Have you seen the show at the Rep yet?
Not at the Rep. I've seen it, and I've, like I said, seen two concerts, and I have the CD, but I sure hope I can get down there to see it.
Yeah, I hope you can, too. You need to get down there to see it. That's interesting. Of all the musicals, it's her favorite.
Well, yeah. We all love it, too. I mean, I think I can speak for all of the cast. I really, really love singing this music.
You do.
So much. This is one of my favorite shows as well, and I know Mark has been wanting to do it for a long time. It's been a favorite of his, and it's powerful. It's powerful for us every night. So if people love hearing it, we love singing it just as much.
I think as actors, we always have those short lists of shows that we want to do, and this has been on, I think, many of our short
definitely.
Lists for a long time.
Why?
You know, when the show first came out, I said, oh, that's a show that I totally want to do. And I, from the moment it came out, I wanted to play Emma Goldman in it. It wasn't like I wanted to play Mother. I didn't want to play Evelyn Nesbitt. I didn't want to play any other part. I did want to play Sarah. Shh, don't talk. But, you know, I think it just resonates with us as actors, too. It's material that we want to tell the story.
Right. And so what about the songs? Are they fun to sing?
So much fun. They're
just beautiful.
They are.
It's amazing. Like we were talking about, there's 35 actors. And you know what's cool is that with a cast that big, you don't think everyone would be connected. But everybody in this cast loves this show.
Yeah.
So it's so passionate. So you feel that on stage every night. Like after the opening, I'm always like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I am so excited.
There's so many moments, more than any other show I've ever done, including Les Mis, which says a lot. There's just epic moments. The opening is epic.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a number in Act One that you think is got to be the finale of Act One. And it's not. It's just so big and gorgeous. And then the finale of Act One is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. There's just so much to celebrate in this show musically.
You know, it's interesting because you're all saying this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we also have, this has been the perfect storm for everything between production, crew, and cast. You know, with a cast this big and this many personalities, you can have one personality in the cast that just maybe, well, I don't really care for that. It's been like the perfect storm of people not being able to do the contract, people filling in, and, you know, from
it's
the casting
crazy.
Process, that if it was any other cast, I don't think that we would have had the reaction that we've had within the cast as well. We've been bonded since day one. Yeah. We've been laughing since day one.
It's been such a gift.
Oh, I'm so glad for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I do.
Thought we had to stop the interview.
Right.
And we're done.
That's as good as you get. Thank you, Jeannie, very much for the call. Patty in Huchesford, hi.
Hi. Thank you for this show. It's wonderful. I'm a longtime Milwaukee Rep Theater goer, and I want to say this was fantastic.
Oh, yay.
I saw it on the opening preview night Tuesday.
Wow. Oh, goodness.
Our first run-through.
The comment I want to make to Jesse is, I was sitting in the first row, and I saw the tear in her eye at the end. It was...
Cry now. Jeez.
As far as I'm concerned, Sarah and Cole stole the show.
Well, thank you so much.
All of Milwaukee needs to see this. It was phenomenal. I applaud you, and thank you so much. We thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for your call. Thank you for supporting.
That
was great. KP saw the show over the weekend, too, and he said his take on Evelyn Nesbitt and Harry Houdini was that they almost served as a distraction to things that were going on at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, what they do in this script with regards to Houdini is that he was an immigrant made good. So he represents Tatata when he first comes to America and tries to live his dream as an artist, and he has nothing, is... Think of Houdini. The lyric is, think of Houdini, that fabulous immigrant. And he breaks those chains, literally and figuratively. And as far as as Evelyn, you know, at the time, she sort of became a sort of twisted, you know, realization of the American dream. She had celebrity. She had everything, but for totally the wrong reasons. So
this whole celebrity thing is interesting, isn't it? It's interesting that she was so big then. In some ways, I try to discount some of those people because they fill up too much of, you know, the newspaper and television, and who cares about them? But she sounds like she was, the story was so compelling with the love interest and the age of this young person. And
yeah, she was really young, and Stanford White was, I mean, it all kind of came out later, you know, just he really had many, many, many affairs and had a penchant for very young women, but he was also an extremely brilliant and respected architect and family man. And this the wealthy Harry Thaw that she married was he was an heir and he was crazy, and all of the details that came out were just so sordid. Every detail after the next got kind of, the story just kind of kept getting crazier and crazier. But it, truly, I mean, she, once all of that was over, it all crashed for her, and she managed a bar and kind of for many years and ran a couple of speakeasies supposedly, and then lived a very, very quiet life.
So, really?
There you have it.
Or maybe she didn't and we just don't know about it. You don't know. Jesse, tell me more about Sarah, and we're going to listen. We have a part of a clip from Sarah's song.
Sure. Well, the song we're about to hear is Daddy's Son. Like I said, she is a single mother. I guess, should I say, like, what happens to the baby? I'm like, should I tell them what happens to the baby?
Go ahead. They'll forget if they're going to see it.
So it's kind of, I don't want people coming in and hating Sarah, but she buries her child. So she, you know, she's supposed to be between, like, 17 and 19 years old. She has this child, and no one is around, you know. She didn't have a mother looking out for her. She didn't have anyone. And the man that she was in love with and promised her all of these things left and treated her poorly. So, it was a moment of panic. And in this song is when she is holding her baby. And I think in my characterization, I feel like it's one of the first times she's speaking these words and really apologizing to her child. And she says it was because you have your father's hands and you are your daddy's son, you know? So that's the song.
Daddy played piano, played it very well. Music from those hands could catch you like a spell. He could make you love him, for the tune was done. You have your daddy's hands. You are your daddy's son.
Just part of the song, but it's beautiful, isn't it?
I love singing it. It's like we've said, all of this music, it's so easy to get lost into it. You know, it's beautiful.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Isn't that something that you all sing to? I wish I could sing. Here you are on stage and you're just singing. And you act as well. I mean, it's really, that's a lot of talent for a person to have, isn't it?
Well,
it's the job.
I hope the audience agrees with you that we all have a lot of talent. I think for us, it just becomes what we do, you know. And we never. It's so cool. I mean, it can be hard and it can be demanding and unglamorous. But at the end of the day, we get to play on stage and play dress up and tell sometimes really silly stories and sometimes really incredible, powerful, important stories like this.
That's so what's special about this one.
It's still amazing to me every night that this is my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walking through the streets and seeing businessmen on the way to work, sometimes I'm like, what would it be like to have a 9-to-5 job?
You will never know that. Probably.
I will never.
I mean, they think that we're doing is cool, but I think what they're doing is cool, too.
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. And you're lucky to be able to do what you do.
It's true.
But isn't it interesting that you have, and this is a lovely thing in life, that you're able, and maybe if you only did this show, it sounds like it's such from the heart experience for all of you that you'll always remember this show.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, and this particularly does, it feels timely. I mean, we're not done with race issues in this country by a long shot. So, It's powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. An email from Heidi on Facebook. She's going to Ragtime this weekend. So excited to see this production, and thank you for giving insight into it and its characters. I see many parallels with present-day politics, especially what's been going on in Wisconsin during the past couple of years. Do you emphasize that in any way? Do all of you see parallels as to what's going on in Wisconsin or in America right now? And is that one of the reasons that this show is being done now, do you think?
I can't speak to anything specific, but like I said, I think, well, actually, I mean, there were a few specific issues that we did discuss during our table work. But regarding race, there are race issues, mm-hmm. really, really deep racial issues in this country, and really strong divides, and we've seen that politically, and people feeling really, really marginalized, and things getting more and more polarized politically. And
yes.
So, yeah.
What's table work?
Table work is when I know Mark Clements does this on all of his shows, and I think it's so important and powerful. We all sit around the first day of rehearsal, and actually for us, we did it at least on Assassins. We were there for probably a week.
For Assassins, we never got up from the table for the first week.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, and if you have the luxury of doing that, I think this is such a big show physically that we needed to get on our feet a little sooner. But we sat around, we read through the script, including the song lyrics, just talked them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then one by one talked about each of our characters, and specifically the people with a historical mm-hmm. background, and talked about what this show meant to us and what the themes were running through it and what each of our characters means to the story. So, yeah, it's such an awesome place to be in the rehearsal process, because it's when everybody gets to know each other as people and as performers, and you really get to the heart and the underbelly of the show.
And Jess, let me ask you, what preparation you do as a performer to be in a show like this? Is the historical period of importance to you? Do you read about that? Do you?
Definitely. I'm not playing a historical figure,
right. So.
But it was nice to have the table work and have everybody talk about what their characters were, so we all can relate to that, since we're all trying to do the same story. We all had to read the novel, and I have played the role before, so I had read the novel before. So it was nice to revisit it. You know, I played it 4 years ago, so a lot's happened in my life in the past 4 years, you know, and you bring that to who you're playing. But definitely, I think the table work is super important, because then you know, okay, this is what Henry Ford is going to mean in our story, you know, and so everybody is aware. So
right.
That was nice.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what about for Emma?
The process for me this time was a little bit different. Last year it was just figuring out who she was as a person. She was put in Assassins to kind of make the story of the assassin happen that I was actually in contact with. But this one has a little bit more historical value. So this year I read a lot more of her essays and her own writings and some of her magazines. And so I did a lot more of those works, because she's actually saying some of those words in this, The Night That Goldman Spoke, and some of the speeches that she's giving are actually true to what she actually said at that time.
So set this up. This is you in, this is the Broadway show, and it's the night that Goldman spoke at Union Square.
It's the culmination of Tata realizing that his American dream isn't going to happen unless he works harder, and the only way he knows how to work is to go to work in these sweatshop type things to take care of his daughter, because being an artist on the street is not working for him. And it's also the introduction to one of the New Rochelle family's mother's younger brother, who is basically searching for something in this world. He's very uneasy in this upper middle class, and so it's a culmination of all of this together, and Emma actually speaking about striking and coming together as a union.
It was winter in New York as the snow began to fall, and the workman's hall had not a seat to spare. When a young man ducked inside just to warm himself was all, the night that Goldman spoke at Union Square.
What is happening in Lawrence is happening everywhere.
Was speaking loud and fast through a haze of noise and heat, and the smell of sweat and anger in the air. The police were standing by, but the crowd was on its feet. The night that Goldman spoke
at Union Square.
From Ragtime, it's at the Milwaukee Rep, and it will be there until October 27. We have three of the actresses in the production with us here on our show, and we're welcoming phone calls. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation about Ragtime, a musical just opened recently at the Milwaukee Rep, continuing through October 27. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Let's talk about musicals for a moment. Are there a lot of new musicals that are being produced, or is this an age gone by?
There are, but musicals like this, they come, I think, once every few years that resonates with the public, that resonates with actors. It seems like Broadway is churning out a lot of movie musicals, so there's not a fresh idea. Some of them are really good. Yeah, some of them are really well done. But looking at what's coming up on this the upcoming season, there's a couple that are coming out that I think that are going to be hits, and I think they're going to be fun to do, and I think that they're going to have a great regional career. But there's others that we definitely
There's been a lot of jukebox musicals, but then every now and again you get like a Book of Mormon, which is, you know, so innovative. And
I wouldn't say it's an age gone by.
There's definitely
people still creating things and new ideas coming out, but especially living in New York City, you know, you hear
the big classical musicals, like something like Ragtime that came out in '98 and then was revived again 10 years later after that. These type of big musicals, the Les Mis's, the Ragtimes, they don't come out so often. But then every once in a while you get them and they live on.
Yeah.
So we hope for them.
Yep, definitely.
And do you train for them? Let's start, like, for each of you to respond to this. Did you, when you were fashioning your career, is your career centered on doing this kind of performance, or are you equally at home just with a spoken word on stage, Jesse?
Personally, for me, I love singing, and I always have. And so I kind of got into theater when I was maybe 10 or 11, and since then it's been musical theater. But I love plays. You know, I just love telling good stories, you know. I'm obviously open to TV, commercial, film. Just saying. But
you can contact my resume. Your agent at 2-1.
Right. Just kidding. But no, musical theater is really my passion. I love that live sense, you know, of like anything can happen at this moment right now.
Seriously,
anything.
Melissa, how about you?
I'm mostly based as a musical theater actress, but it's funny that your career will take you where it needs to go. I've done a handful of plays. The rest of my season is all plays. So I think for myself, being a very specific character, I'm not the ingenue. I'm not the ensemble girl. So I think a lot what I'm looking at now is creating my own art and creating my own shows and my own type things. Looking at more one-woman pieces and characters that maybe don't get a fair shot.
She does a wicked Ethel Merman.
I do.
Oh, you do?
And I'm about to play Sophie Tucker also as well. So for me, you know, those kind of characters, looking into them and saying, how can I create my own art? Because there's not always the art out there for me to be working at. So finding that happy medium has been, I think, the next step of where I'm going in my career, especially being an older actress, so...
Older. Look
at these kids. I'm sitting next to.
Right.
Hello.
That's a daunting task, though, isn't it? I mean, to find the material and stage your own show.
Well, it's a daunting material trying to get hired for a show. So if you can create
this
your
career.
Own art, you can say, that's mine. This is mine. It's really exciting. It's actually an exciting next step for me, I think. So,
So how do you get hired for a show? Or for a commercial, for that matter? How do you do that?
Auditions. So auditions, I mean, they could be anywhere from here, Milwaukee, New York City, Philly. I audition for Ragtime in New York City. So,
And you present, what did you do? A piece from the show? Or?
Yeah, it depends. Sometimes there's open calls, so you'll choose a song of your own, something from another musical that you think relates that, or you could choose a song from the show. Or other times when you're sent in for shows, you get sides from the musical. So in this case, I got the sides for Sarah. So I got Your Daddy's Son, which you heard, that song I had to perform, and then the scenes with Cole House. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just have, you know, what, like 5 minutes to show your thing and see what happens?
At open calls, you have 30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, so basically. 30
seconds. You have to be real careful about what you wear. Do you think about what I'm going to wear?
Oh, yeah.
This?
Yeah, definitely.
It becomes a science and an art.
I'll bet
you know,
it
you
is.
Don't,
it's
you
a
don't
job.
Want to wear anything too distracting. So you might have a gorgeous patterned dress, but you don't want to – there's just mm-hmm. – there's so many things to think about. You know, you kind of want to keep things simple but still be yourself. And,
right.
Yeah.
It's a science, definitely.
It's a science, yeah.
And it becomes your job. It does. I mean,
I'm
auditioning,
sure.
They say, you know, they say, I've heard one of my good friends told me this, that auditioning is your job. And when you get a job, that's like vacation.
Oh, my God.
And I'm
so
like,
true.
It's so true. Because here in Milwaukee, I'm like, this is great.
And then how did they let you know you got the you got the role?
You get called in. Sometimes I've never been told in the room. I'm not that good.
Yeah, that'll happen every now and again. They'll just say, so you want to do the show, but most of the time they'll call either you or your agent if you have a representation, and
they call you on the phone.
It's a nice phone call.
It's crazy business, isn't
it's
it?
A real nice phone call.
It's a real nice phone call. Just careful where about, you take it.
Right. I've seen you sing in so many different kinds of people, you know, and you must have a heavy training in singing, right?
Yeah, I'm a theater baby. I grew up doing this. I'm from northern New Jersey, and I grew up in the theater community in New York City. And,
oh, you did?
Yeah, I was a professional actor from the time I was 8 years old.
And oh, my gosh.
It was cool. I had amazing supportive parents. And the proximity to the city was really wonderful. I got to sing with the New York City Opera Children's Chorus and super supportive parents. But I still had a really, really normal life and went to a regular high school. I've been doing this forever.
Wow. So do you think you need a 9-to-5 office job now just to have something different?
No, I don't, actually. I could not. It just wouldn't be for me. And I've had plenty of different kind of jobs throughout the years.
Right.
But I'm too much of a gypsy. Mm-hmm. It's deeply
and a mommy
embedded.
Now. And a mommy. That's a full-time job.
Yeah. I do get up early. I used to not be a morning person, but now I have to because my kid gets up.
Yeah. And what about people ask this? I always wonder how, particularly when you have two shows to do in a day. Every time I see a show and it's a nighttime show and you've done a matinee, it has to. I just wonder about the energy. If you have a certain kind of, you know, cracker that you eat or something that you drink, because I don't
Starbucks
know how people
and
do
Red
that.
Bull.
Starbucks and
you
what?
Know,
Red Bull.
It's very often about what you don't eat. You have to be really conscientious about what you're putting in your body on those days to make sure that you're not too full, but that you have enough energy and. Yeah, it's tricky, and it's different on every show. I mean, if you're dancing a lot in a show, it's a different experience than if you've just got a handful of lines or a simple, easy song to sing. We have to be really mindful about how we treat our bodies, even those of us that are not, you know, dancing all the time.
Right.
You just have to be really mindful to get enough sleep and eat well and drink plenty of water.
Sleep is huge.
Sleep is huge. Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you do about sleep? You got to be pretty wound up when the show is over.
Yeah, you would think, but I don't know. Some days I have been, but other days I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't cry or be sad anymore. So I try and laugh a lot.
We welcome phone calls if you want to join our conversation. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. I know it's early in the run, and the chances are hit or miss that we might be finding people who have seen the show, but perhaps some of you have, or you've seen it somewhere else, Ragtime the Musical. We'd love to hear from you. Conrad on email says this summer he traveled to the Haymarket Memorial in a cemetery in Chicago, Forest Home Cemetery, near River Forest in Oak Park neighborhoods. I didn't realize that Emma Goldman is also buried there. Definitely worth a pilgrimage. Have you been there?
I didn't know that.
I thought she was buried in Canada, but okay.
Wow.
I might have to make a little trip.
Yeah. Can we look it up to find out if that indeed it is true? KP says it's true, so you will have to go there.
Cool.
That's neat. Day trip. Yeah, because she spent most of her later life in Canada and was only granted access to come back into the United States for a book tour if she would speak out against, it was the rise of Nazism at the time.
Oh.
So she was also trying to amp up for World War II. It was the only time she was allowed back in the country after she was deported.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she spent most of her later life in Canada. But knowing this now, I think we're going to have to take a little trip.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
So cool.
Her body was brought back to the U.S. with the permission of immigration.
Oh, wow.
KP writes. Oh, that's you will have to take that trip. That'll be quite an experience.
Isn't that cool? And I'm here. That's amazing. That's what I mean. Like, this cast was meant to be here. It's just cool.
Yeah. I love it. So are there some, and I'm wondering, you have to have a certain level of performance that's up to par. It has to be good. But I'm wondering if you judge yourselves on a daily basis. And if there's something, what that may be to determine whether or not it's been an exceptional performance.
I had one of those nights last night.
Yeah?
It was definitely one of those nights that I Facebooked after the show. Like, theater gods, you are against me in everything I do. I just had one of those shows where I felt off, but I was really excited to do the show last night. I didn't speak all day Monday because we had been coming off 2 weeks of really intense rehearsals and previews and teching. And so I felt really pumped up and amped up, and there was just some technical issues and then some costume issues where I almost lost my skirt on stage.
Oh, my gosh. Did you
come
really?
See Ragtime. She
yeah,
did.
Come see Ragtime.
What
yeah.
night will that be happening again?
It will not be happening again. I'm going to bolt that onto my body this time. So, you know, we definitely have those shows, and all we do is say, we laugh it off. Like, we had a good laugh
and
in the dressing room afterwards.
I was just thinking the exact opposite. I was having kind of a not so great of a day, and I thought, oh, I'm not feeling great. I'm not sure vocally where I'm at. And I ended up having a great show.
She did, yeah.
So you just kind of never know, and you have to do what you do to prepare. And know that, you know, you're not always going to give what you think is your best performance, but it's so much about staying relaxed physically and mentally, and it's taken me a long time to learn that and to really apply that at every show.
For me, the shows that are always better for me are the ones that I know that there's someone in the audience that I don't know.
Yeah.
When it's just an audience, you know, but it seems like every time I put more pressure on myself
when people
even
come,
though I'm rehearsed,
that you know.
And I'm ready to go, and it's and it's a show that I know inside and out, and I'm comfortable doing everything. It's always when someone's in the audience that I think I judge myself the worst.
Yeah, interesting. So. Yeah. And I think what you said, Kelly, is so true about being relaxed, and we almost have to train ourselves to do
to
that because
go.
Otherwise you can forget and you get tense.
Truly.
And if you are relaxed, you're just much better at whatever you do. And it's hard, if you're a performer, it's really hard to do that.
Definitely. You need a certain level of body awareness, and I learned so much in acting school. I had a background as a dancer my whole life, and I had teachers point out to me, we would do kind of roll downs and body exercises, and they'd say, you're not even bending there. You're so tense. You're so stiff. So you just need to gain an awareness of your body, and it's more than just saying, oh, tell yourself to relax. It's you really have to understand your own body and things that trigger you and, and just sort of letting your body do what it's going to do and what it needs to do. Yeah.
Let's go to Mary in Delafield. Hello, Mary.
Well, hi. Just listening to this show has certainly stimulated me to want to see it. But my question is, we have a 9-year-old granddaughter. Would this be appropriate for her? She's acted on stage a couple times, and she also has played some ragtime music. But I just wondered about the subject matter and everything for her.
I think it really depends on the 9-year-old, but it's a little young, but there are a couple of young children in the show, and I think overall, these are messages that kids probably need to hear. So I think for a child that age, if they're talked to before the show and after the show about the subject matter, that it would be something that would be really wonderful for them to see.
Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to look for a little more information on the website for the rep, there's actually a study guide that we're sending out to schools. I'm doing some of the education outreach. It's definitely look at some of the materials and the ages that we are recommending the show for.
And I keep forgetting this is such a nice thing the rep does. You have sessions before each performance, don't you? Every performance where somebody talks about the play, and then there are some talk back sessions.
We do. We were actually just talking about that. It's associate artist Jerry Nugent, who's doing the rep in depth on this show, and for no other reason, you've got to see what he wears during this little session. He wears something really wonderful, it's great. He talks about the history of the show and about a little bit about ragtime music, and it's so cool. Rep in Depth is such an awesome thing.
That's
such a great
really
resource.
Nice thing to do. And what about? I'm sorry.
Every Friday is the talkbacks. So after the show, the cast and some of the artistic staff will come out and talk, as well as all the student matinees. We also do a talkback for the students afterwards.
Oh, that's
as well.
Great. We have about 45 seconds left. We haven't talked about ragtime music. What is it? Why is it so infectious?
Oh gosh.
The syncopation.
Yeah. I think it just had more soul than what people were listening to at the time. It just kind of gets you in your gut in a way that music hadn't really up until that point.
Yeah. It was the start of it.
It's danceable and it's, oh, it's just fun.
Yeah.
Well, it better be danceable. What would you guys do up there?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So it runs through just some details. October 27. Are you dark any day of the week?
We're dark on Mondays and occasionally on Tuesdays. But the schedule, it's all up on MilwaukeeRep.com.
Well, this has been just delightful. I can't wait to see you. Now, you see, instead of having seen you, maybe I'll always do this because now I get to anticipate seeing you.
Definitely.
In October with Kathleen and Dunn, which will be fun. Thank you all so much for being with us. Our thanks to Jesse Hooker, who plays Sarah. She's making her Milwaukee Rep debut.
Woo-hoo!
All right.
I love it here.
Yeah, good. Melissa Joy Hart plays Emma Goldman, and she appeared last season in the Rep's production of Assassins. Kelly Faulkner is playing Evelyn Nesbitt, and she's been in all kinds of shows. She was Sally Bowles' terrific performance in Cabaret, also a wonderful performance in Patsy in Always. She played Patsy Cline. We got to say goodbye. So thank you for your calls. Thanks to KP Whaley, who saw the show and got all this music together. Thanks, KP.
Thanks, KP.
Analysis of it and for producing. And to Rhonda Fanning, we thank her as well. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1. Great conversations ahead.